This show is a part of the FM Podcast Network. Visit us at fmpods.com.
When I was a kid growing up in Jersey, anybody who was a hoot or really funny or something, we'd call them a riot. Ladies and gents, this guy's a riot in more ways than one. Bob Dylan.
This is Bob Dylan, the show that celebrates the work of Bob Dylan, 20 questions at a time, part of the FM Podcast Network. I'm your host of Freewheeling, Rob Kelly, and joining me for this very special, very fun episode are my pals, Allison Rapp. Hi, Allison.
Hey, how are you?
Doing great. Rebecca Slayman.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And Melissa Tomczak.
Hello.
Thank you all for being here. It means a lot to me. As you know, I realized I wanted to start wrapping up the show. I sort of thought about, like, I didn't want to get so cornered into just doing songs, even though that's been the format to this point. I wanted to try and cover as much ground as humanly possible and have as many of my favorite guests on as possible, again, in the last couple of weeks of the show. And so one of the ideas I had is, you know, to this point on the show, for anyone who's listening to it for any period of time, knows we focus on the work. That's really been the focus of this show. But of course, Bob Dylan's legend is vast in every conceivable angle. Its breadth, its depth, its endure, its length. And so I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about that aspect of it and cover, you know, some other parts of his legend and his life that we have not really gotten to. And also in a format that allows as many different inputs as possible, as many different opinions as possible. So what we're going to be doing here, as I mentioned at the top, it's called 20 questions. I've come up with 10 questions about Bob's career, Bob's work, Bob's life that my guests are going to answer. And then they themselves have come up with their own questions that all of us are going to answer back and forth. And we've all had access to these questions beforehand. We've all had a chance to look at these over. It's some of them are silly. Some of them are more pointed, but, and you will, dear listener, will be able to decide which ones you find the most interesting as we go through it. So again, the three of you, thank you all for coming back on the show one last time. I really appreciate you. All your episodes that you've done on the show with me before have been terrific, and it means a lot to me for you to come on one last time. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it's exciting. A legacy. It's so honored. I feel so honored to be part of the legacy of this podcast. And I know my sisters here, my Bob Dylan sisters would agree.
Of course.
Awesome. Again, thank you all very much. All right, let's get started. We're going to get through all these questions as fast as we can. Some answers are going to require, I think, fairly lengthy answers. Some maybe not so much. Again, we'll see as we go. So I'm going to start with my questions, and I'm going to start with you, Allison. So okay. Question one for me is, what is your favorite Bob Dylan album cover?
Every single question that you've come up with, I should probably preface all of my answers by saying that if you asked me these questions like in an hour from now, it would probably be different, or tomorrow, what have you. But I think I'd have to go with the Freewheeling Bob Dylan. I have walked that street so many times now living here in New York. I love the outfits they're wearing on the cover. I've been looking for a green jacket like the kind Susie's wearing on the cover of it. I love it so much. I even have, I had a friend draw the cover of that album, and actually I framed it and hung it up on my wall. That's my favorite cover, definitely.
Would you ever dare to feature a current Paramore on one of your works, just in case? Would that be afraid you'd be whamming your relationship by immortalizing them in such a way?
It could happen. Who knows?
All right, we'll have to see. So, okay, Rebecca, what about you?
Highway 61. It's got to be my favorite. And I'm glad you brought up the fashion, because that shirt is like, or is it a jacket? We don't know. It is lost to time, and I want it so badly. But that cover, he looks really cute. What can I say?
Not that Bob has missed at this point a lot of opportunities to merchandise his name, but there really should be like a Bob Dylan fashion line at this point, right? Am I crazy? Yeah. Like
the totally. I mean, you know? Let's get on it, guys.
the polka dot shirt, the Triumph shirt. I mean, you know, all those famous looks he's had. I mean,
yeah, why not? Todd Dylan's over at Next Venture Fashion Line.
Yeah, there we go. Fashion Line. Absolutely.
Surprise, this is the launch.
Yeah, right. This is the stealth launch of that fashion line. So, okay. So, Melissa, what's your favorite cover?
Okay. I'm going to say Bringing It All Back Home, because it's just like, it's fascinating that all of us, well, I don't know about you, Rob, but like all of us have chosen the like 60s era stuff. I was sort of straddling between Bringing It All Back Home and Blood on the Tracks, which is of course a classic, but I just think there's such like a swagger to Bringing It All Back Home, like the look that he's giving and the woman in the background, it's like, who is this woman? And like, why is she so sultry and amazing? And I want to be her for Halloween one year. And like, just all of like the magazines they're holding and stuff and the fisheye lens sort of thing that's going on. I don't know. It just looks so cool. And I feel like it captures the mood of the album pretty well. Yeah. I love it. I think it's so cool.
Sally Grossman back there, she looks like she stepped out of Mad Men, you know, like just impossibly fashionable with the cigarette and everything, just that imperious look that she's got. It's just kind of amazing. So yeah, they're all, yeah, I mean, the guy really knew how to do album covers, especially in the 60s. We've talked about this on the show before. My favorite is Oh Mercy, just because of that painting. I love that painting, that wall, that mural from, it was in Hell's Kitchen. And I was very disheartened to learn after I figured out where it was from that it's not there anymore. It got painted over, which is like, what? You know, like, but apparently Bob just saw it one day and liked it, and they went and snapped it and got permission from the artist to do it. And between the topography and that painting, I've always just loved that image. I just think I like when he's on his record album covers, but that one to me is like the one that, you know, the Knocked Out Loaded is like, okay. But the Oh Mercy, to me, it's just his name and that bold type and just the name of the album is so fantastic. So that's always been my favorite. But okay. So next question, we'll start with you, Rebecca. Your favorite Bob video?
Oh, this is easy. Has anybody seen my love? There you go. I show this to like, at every party I'm at, I'm like, if we're playing music videos, you guys gotta check this one out. And it impresses everyone, especially like the film people that I know that I work with. Paul Schrader directed it. It is so bizarre. It is amazing how limp Bob Dylan is in this music video when he's just sitting at a table, head in his hands. It is so dramatic. It has like a story that is incomprehensible. I would love to know the thought that went behind it. And the fashion, also incredible. So that one is my favorite.
Do people have a particular reaction when you play that?
I mean, it's like, always the same
song
one.
Is terrific. The song is so fun. Is. You know?
No, it's always the same one. It's like, what? What's going on? That's always the reaction.
it's a head scratcher, and I'm trying to imagine Bob Dylan and Paul Schrader working together. Like, what was that like? You know,
a nightmare, probably.
You know, act, motherfucker, act. You know, I cannot do it. So, okay, that's fantastic choice. Okay, Melissa, what's your favorite video?
Okay, well, I may have like slightly misinterpreted this question because I wasn't like exactly thinking of just music videos. I was just thinking about like videos in general, but like the Things Have Changed music video is fun. But my first thought was his cameo on Pawn Stars. Like, I don't know why, but like that's like one of my favorite things he's ever done in his whole career. Like, it's so it's so funny. I just love like how psychotic he is, and the fact that he won't come to like winning the Nobel Prize, but like he'll show up to Pawn Stars is so funny to me, and it's my favorite thing in the world. It's awesome. And it makes me laugh. So that was my first thought. I don't know if you just meant like music video.
Well, I think it says something about yourself that you chose to expand it out from there. But
yeah,
it is very funny to me that like there are presidents who probably wanted to meet Bob Dylan and have not, but Chumley has from Pawn Stars.
It's so awesome. It's so funny. He's so cool.
You get the sense that Bob is just at home watching TV and he's just like, I like that show. And then he calls his agent and they're like, make some calls.
You know? Literally, probably he could call anybody at this point. And he calls Chumlee.
You guys don't think that was just random on the street? That they found him?
God, that would be so amazing if it was.
Do you think, before we move on to Allison's, do you think Bob, I bet he does, right? He checks out antique shops? That seems like something I bet he does. That seems like a Bob thing.
Yeah. I think he drives around in that pickup that he has and gets out with his old jeans and boots. And he says, time to go antiquing. I think that's the kind of man he is.
Considering we never get like paparazzi photos of him, I mean, it makes sense he'd go to a place where people wouldn't like do that, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, we live in the 1800s in this building.
I'm sure Bob loves the idea of like bartering. You know, that's an old timey idea, you know, where he's probably like looking at an old watch and he's like, I'll give you 50 for it. And the guy's like, I don't know, 45? All right.
He's like, 50 million? I know how much money you have.
What are you talking about? Yeah. All right. Well, that's, again, that's a perfectly fine answer. Allison, what about you?
Well, I also kind of cheated a little bit unknowingly because I didn't think of just strictly music videos. I love, and I just recently watched it, the footage from the MTV Unplugged 1994 video, start to finish, is just fabulous. Again, the fashion, the polka dot shirt, the sunglasses. He's still playing guitar then. The band is so good in that video itself. Some of his little, like, body language movements during that show are so specific that they seem like only things that, you know, Dylan fans are gonna laugh at or pick up on or notice specifically, but I love that show in its entirety. I think it's awesome.
I wish there was a bootleg series of that, because the stuff he that got left off is amazing. That's a really, really fun show. And it's funny, he's got his sunglasses on the whole time, you know. He's like, I don't want to be seen, everybody.
I hadn't noticed before at the end, I like left it on, you know, like through the credits and stuff. And at the end, he's like dabbing people up in the audience, laughing them up. And it's so funny.
He's so cool.
Having a good time. All right. Well, again, all great answers. So, all right. So, Melissa, I'll start with you for the next one. What Bob song would you most want turned into a movie? And extra credit will be awarded if you bother to come up with a star and or director for said movie.
Okay. I feel like this is supposedly like up my alley question, but it gives me so much anxiety because there's so many to choose from. And cause like, you know, so many of his films have such a great narrative to it. But like, again, my first thought, I swear to God, I respect Bob. I love when he's serious and deep, but like, I could only think about Tweeter and the Monkey Man.
That's what I picked too.
So did I.
You got to go. Oh my God, you guys are all on the same level. Like, because it's just, it's so good. I mean, I'm sure everybody else. Okay, so I guess I'll just say my pick for director or whatever. I didn't think of stars, but I was thinking like a Coen brother, maybe. Was it Ethan that just did Driveway Dolls? Or
yeah, it's Ethan. Yeah.
Because Ethan does the sillier stuff, so maybe Ethan, or both of them. I would love both of them to get back together and do it. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's a quirkier director out there that could do it too.
Wow. Like,
Tweeter and the Monkey Man, directed by Wes Anderson. Or something.
Oh my God. So all right. So Allison, did you pick Tweeter as well?
I did pick Tweeter. Well, I hadn't gotten as far as the director or anything yet, but I definitely picked Tweeter. I'd love to, I mean, like Bruce Springsteen cameo would be hilarious, obviously. Oh, yeah. Or some other, like, you know, famous star showing up like that. But I hadn't quite gotten that far.
Okay. Wow. So Rebecca, what did you pick? Did you pick Tweeter as well?
Same thing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. I mean, it's so cinematic. It is very like straightforward story. It has a trans character in it, which is like, I feel like nobody knows about this. This is huge for the canon of Bob Dylan. Star, I would pick Patty Harrison, comedian extraordinaire. But I was also having trouble thinking of a director. I thought maybe Wong Kar Wai would be absolutely sickening, like the visuals in that. Mm. but it wouldn't have like the New Jersey connection unless he went to New Jersey, which, I mean, this is a fantasy world. We can make anything up we want to.
Sure. Yeah. Some crazy studio has allotted $100 million budget for the Tweeter and the Monkey Man movie. I can't believe we all picked the same song because I had Tweeter and the Monkey Man as well. I went with, I didn't come up with a star, even though it was my own question, but director, I went with a guy named Carl Franklin. He is unfortunately not well enough known. He directed two movies in the 90s, a really terrific film noir called One False Move with Bill Paxton and Billy Bob Thornton. And then he did Devil in a Blue Dress with Denzel Washington, two really terrific, you know, neo-noir thrillers. And because neither one of those movies made any money, he basically got thrown in movie jail, and he's been directing television ever since. Not that directing television is some black mark against your career. And he has done a lot of like kind of full noir TV. And he directed a bunch of episodes of Mindhunter, the David Fincher TV show from Netflix, which I thought was terrific. And I think he has that kind of gritty, no nonsense, no thrills style that I think Bob would respond to. Not that Bob was going to have like, you know, a hand in it, but input, right. But I just think what would be a director that Bob would like? And I think Bob likes those 50s thrillers. And I think Carl Franklin could deliver that kind of movie with, you know, this kind of story. So, yeah, we all went with Tweeter That's and so the Monkey awesome. Man. Unbelievable.
A Michael Mann Tweeter and the Monkey Man.
Oh, my
if
God.
You're saying like a no-nonsense type of filmmaker, Michael
you
Mann.
Imagine that. Oh, Fincher. Man. Oh, the one star that I did think to be in the movie was Michael Shannon. I love Michael Shannon.
Michael Shannon.
He's terrifying. And I just think he would, I don't even know who he'd be. He'd probably be the lawman. He would probably be he would be the lawman who's chasing after these guys. Cause he's just one of these guys who's like, he's on the right side of the law, but it like, you feel like if he gets pushed even in the slight direction, he's going to go insane. Mm-hmm. So I think he would be great. So Hollywood has got to get this going. Cause four of us picked this movie.
Clearly.
Come on.
The guy's got 500 songs and we all picked the same song.
Not even a Bob Dylan soul song.
Not even a Bob Dylan song.
Yeah. It's like him and Tom Petty, you know? I mean, yeah. My favorite note about the writing of that song was that song was apparently almost entirely written by Bob and Tom Petty. And they sat down to say, we're going to write an Americana type song. And they said that to George Harrison, and Harrison's like, I don't know what that means. And he just like walked away. He's like,
George.
All right, guys. Okay. You know, whatever.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah. Do whatever you want. That's fine. I'll go make something in the kitchen. I'm just a beetle. I'm going to go make some coffee. So, okay. Well, that's amazing that we all picked the same song. So, okay. Next up, Allison, I'll start with you. Favorite Bob creation that is not a song. Anything, a book, anything he's ever worked on that's not a song.
I'm gonna go with the Heaven's Door whiskey line because I didn't even like whiskey, and I was like the first person to buy the bottle. I never drank the whole thing, and you know, like way shorter of a time than I'd like to admit. Kept the bottle, like kept it on my mantle. Loved the, you know, font, like the design on the cover of the bottle with his ironwork. You know, weeded through there. I just think that's the coolest thing. And I wonder how much time he actually spends drinking his own product.
Do you do anything with the bottle now? Or is it just an ornament?
It's sitting up on my mantle. I put some dried flowers in it. I like made it into decor.
That's what I was wondering. I was like, did you turn it into something else? That's a very Bob-like thing to do.
I'm not just displaying bottles around.
Yeah, I have a bottle too, and I'm not done with it. And I've had it for like 2 years. And
you're making me look like an alcoholic.
I'm also not, I actively do not like whiskey. But I drove across state lines to get this bottle. I like drove from North Carolina to South Carolina, like an hour and a half. Just to like, it's like, gotta go to the one liquor store that has it, picking it out. Psychotic.
I bought a bottle of it, and I don't drink whiskey, and I drank like two shot glasses full. And I was like, this is okay. And it sat in the cabinet above our fridge for 2 years. And then finally my brother-in-law came to visit, and he's a big whiskey drinker. I said, here, take it. It cost me like $70. I was like, I'm never going to drink this.
Gotta keep fun. The bottle. Gotta tell him to keep the bottle.
I think he probably still has it. I think he probably has been snipping it. So, okay. So, Rebecca, what's your favorite Bob creation? It's not a song.
My favorite Bob creation is the music video. He literally invented the music video with Subterranean Homesick Blues. And I like double checked to make sure it wasn't D.A. Pennebaker's like idea. No, it was Bob's idea to stand there with the cards. And it was so iconic. It's like not even just the medium of music video, but standing there with the cards then became like a huge thing that's parodied to this day. And people don't even know it. So that's a pretty impressive contribution to the culture from Bob Dylan.
I absolutely agree with that. I never knew the, I grew up in the 80s and like the NXS video where they're doing the cards. I was like, oh, that's fun. And then later on, I was like, oh, that's a, it's from Bob Dylan. Okay, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, that is quite a contribution. So, all right, Melissa, what about you?
Okay, I just said, I said Chronicles, Volume 1, just because it's, I think one time, like, you know, years ago when I was kind of first still getting into Bob, I saw an excerpt from it and I was like, that writing is so good. Who wrote that? And then it was Bob. And so I instantly, like, I think I got that the book like that week or something. And I was like, time to read. And it's so good. I think it's extremely fun that he's like lying through half of it. And that, you know, thanks to our friends on Twitter, we know that, like, so many of the lines are kind of, like, lifted from other stuff. And, like, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that people would argue, like, oh, my God, he's, like, plagiarizing. No, he's making it his own thing. And, yeah, I think it's just great. He's, I mean, I got a hunch that this guy's kind of a good writer. So, I don't know. I just love it. And it would be crazy if there was a volume two at some point.
Man, someday, hopefully, you know. Mm-hmm. So, all right, that's fantastic. So, okay, next one, we'll start with you, Rebecca. What Bob Dylan look do you think that you could pull off?
Well, I'm a huge fan of the 80s fashion. I know that's an unpopular opinion, but the big jacket, no shirt underneath is such an incredible look. And he does it over and over and over again. All different kinds of jackets, leather, the fishing lure jacket is what really came to mind when I thought of this question. But yeah, I think I could just make like a fishing lure jacket like he wears in Hearts of Fire. And that should be my look forever now.
I knew you were going to go from the Hearts of Fire era. I figured you couldn't resist that.
I have to defend it. Like someone has to.
Absolutely. It's God's work you're doing. Allison, what about you?
I don't just think I could pull this off. I know I could pull this off because I purposefully bought a polka dot shirt the second I came across one, like shopping, of course, and wear it like all the time on with various blazers, you need leather jackets, everything. That and a pair of sunglasses. I mean, that's such a classic look.
Absolutely. All right, Melissa.
Yeah, I have the same. I have kind of the same answer. Just like I just said, his like going electric era. Yeah, just like the leather look. I definitely had an era that lasted up until probably like a year ago or something, where I kind of just dressed like Bob in the like mid 60s ish. And you just like a lot of black and like leather jacket and boots or whatever. So I feel like that's the look. I don't know. It's so, like you said, Allison, like it's so classic, but, and I feel like anybody could pull it off, but there's a reason for it. I mean, he made it cool. So
my answer to this question is none. I just do not have the ability to do this.
Oh,
I think
on,
you
Rob.
No,
yes, you could.
No, I think you really have to have a certain innate confidence to do it. And I think I just don't have it. And I'll tell a story somewhat related to this was many, many, many years ago. This was in the 90s. I don't even remember how I got it, but I ended up getting arranged to go out on a date with someone, and I was out with a friend, and we went to this, like, I forget what clothes store. We were in New York City, and there were these shoes that had, they were black, like leather shoes, and they had, they had flames painted on the front. And I
Hell
just thought,
yeah, dude.
Right. And I thought they were just this, like, they were so not the kind of thing that I ever would wear. But I was like, you know what? I think Bob would wear something like that. Cause that was when it was the height of, he was wearing like the weird stuff. and inspired me to wear to buy these things. And I bought them, and I went back to my friend's. I was staying at my friend's house up in North Jersey because I was living in South Jersey. I was visiting them. And I went and I put the shoes on to get ready to go for my date. And these other friends of mine made fun of me so mercilessly that I felt so ashamed that I took them off and I never wore them again. And
don't let the haters get you down, dude.
I know. But that's
storage and wear them.
But that's my point, Melissa, is that you have to have the confidence to just say, I don't care if somebody's making fun of me. I know I look cool. I'm wearing them. I didn't have that.
Oh my and God. So if my date showed up with flames painted on his shoes, I'd be like, sign me up.
It's over. Like, we're back. So, yeah.
But that's exactly my point, is that you need to just be able to just push through that. And I didn't have that
ability. Could call off you could say his, like, living in Woodstock era, like, Nashville skyline. Like, just
all right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Maybe one day we'll see. So, okay. So, all right. Next up, Allison, we'll start with you. Favorite member of Bob's band, any era of Bob's backup bands?
This question's hard, but
I mean, Garnier is the kind of like default Tweeter and the Monkey Man answer, but.
You know. Fair, but I'm obsessed with Charlie Sexton. I'm a huge Charlie Sexton fan. I love him. I remember there's something that's so just magnetic about him on stage, both how he plays and what he looks like. I remember, I know this wasn't at a Bob show because there were phones out and obviously Bob doesn't have that, but I was at an Elvis Costello show not all that long ago, and Charlie, you know, kind of goes back and forth between those two bands, and there was a woman a few rows ahead of me who was just sitting there for like 20 minutes Googling photos of Charlie Sexton the whole time, just like looking at pictures of him. I was like, I get it. He's married. Anyway, I love him. I think he's just an incredible guitarist, especially in Bob's band.
That's I mentioned this on Twitter a couple days ago that I, you know, just last week we reviewed Masked and Anonymous, and watching that movie, I'm like, he is such a smoke show in that movie. I mean, like, again, no offense to the other guys in the band, but he looks like a movie star from the 1950s classic era Hollywood. And I'm just like, good Lord, this guy is photogenic. Just unreal. So I totally get it. All right, Rebecca, what about you?
I put Robbie. Shout out to Julia. Eat the document
Me
on
too.
Twitter for
I
her.
Also saw, yeah. Said Robbie. Yeah.
For her Robbie propaganda. It has worked on me. I adore that man. And it makes sense that Melissa would also say that because we were recently at a party talking about Robbie Robertson and someone overheard and was like, oh, are you talking about how annoying Robbie is? And we went off.
We were
like, no, you don't understand.
We said we know somebody who would rip your head off right now.
And then we got called nerds because of it.
Yeah.
Because we knew so much.
Not to call the person out, but it's like, she asked how we met, and we were like, Bob Dylan Twitter. And we were like, yeah, people who just like talk about Bob Dylan on Twitter. And she said, oh, is it like serious? Like, is it a joke? And we were like, no.
Joke.
We were like, no, it's 100% serious. Yeah. We're being genuine. And is that a crime? No.
But yeah, we know the truth about Robbie Robertson. We love him. I also love watching him on stage. I don't get everyone who's like, oh, he's such a ham. He is also enigmatic and beautiful and charismatic. And I hope he wins the Oscar.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. So Melissa, your answer is Robbie as well?
Yeah. Mostly just because a source of embarrassment for me. I feel like I don't really have that much depth of knowledge about his different band members. So I was just kind of like, I'm just going to say Robbie. But like, it's a valid like thing to say. I feel like talk about photogenic men. But yeah, I also like, it helps that I also love just like the band in general. And yeah, he's fun to watch. Such a cool era for Bob. So yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I even said this on our episode that we did on The Last Waltz was when my wife and I went to go see it in the theater in November. She didn't know anything about the band. Like, you know, she knew their existence, but that was it. And at the end of it, I was like, Robbie Robertson. She just could have paused. And she goes, handsome man.
She had more to say, Rob, but I guarantee you she has more to say.
I'm sure she did. We are luckily very open with each other about the people we find attractive. So I was like, hey, all right, go right ahead. Because, I mean, he is. He's a good, impossibly good-looking guy. And good-looking when you see him on a movie screen 30 feet high, which is even harder to be that good-looking when you're blown up, you know, to that size. But, yeah. All right, absolutely. Okay. So next up, Rebecca, I'll start with you. Favorite experience seeing Bob live? And when I ask that for people listening, it can be like either the show was the best that you ever saw, or you had some experience at the show, like something related to the experience, anything involving going to a Bob Dylan concert. What was like your favorite of those experiences?
Yeah, it's definitely like everything around the concert that led me into the most joyous Bob Dylan concert or any concert ever, which was the first night in Brooklyn just this last November. When I met up with some friends, which was really exciting, friends from Twitter who I'd never met before. And then I go in, I got a front row seat all the way on the end. I was so close to the stage, and I'm looking back at Melissa, and I see Timothy Chalamet walking down that aisle. It was so thrilling. I was like, this is just perfect. Everything in the universe is coming together right now to have a wonderful time at this Bob Dylan show. And of course, the concert delivered in so many ways. I was so excited every time he'd start a new song and you're like, what is he playing? Oh, yeah, this one. All right, cool. It was just the best. It was the best day maybe ever.
That's amazing. That's remarkable. Allison?
Mine was also probably last fall when Bob did the Beacon date, and I brought my little sister who had never seen Bob Dylan before ever and was a little bit confused as far as what she was walking into. And I had the same sort of moment where I was like, you're going to meet all of my weird Twitter friends. Like, these are the people that I talk to on a regular basis. And she was like, okay. but we had a great time, and passing the torch down to the next generation.
What did she think of the show?
She really liked it. You know, she recognized some little bits and pieces that she had kind of, you know, known about prior, but she was impressed. I think she was more, I mean, she loved the atmosphere of it. Everybody being so engaged and so involved in the show and being so present because they're not on their phones. I think that was the first time she'd been to a show like that, certainly.
Yeah. Oh, right. For someone her age, it's probably
yeah,
unique experience.
Definitely.
Yeah. Melissa?
I'm going to say the same as Rebecca, that King's Theater show in Brooklyn on that same day when I sat right behind Timothy Chalamet. It was just like such a great experience overall. Like Rebecca said, just like everything leading up to it and also after and stuff. I mean, like we were all there like together in a way, and it was really fun. And he just put on a great performance too. And it was like heightened by the fact that like I just met you guys and like made some new friends, and like Timothy Chalamet is sitting right in front of me. And I was freaking out. And also Jan Wenner, like, which we keep forgetting.
Oh my God, bless you.
Yeah. And then also, oh my God, her name, that's embarrassing. Her name
is Elle Fanning.
Miss Elle Fanning was also there. All of that to say, it was only about Bob that whole night, of course, obviously. Yeah, the performance was really great. I think like that was probably the best experience, just because of everything surrounding it. I don't know if it was like the best concert that I've seen him put on, but it was like definitely the top two or whatever. So yeah, and he played like all the songs I was hoping he would play. I mean, he kind of has been playing the same songs lately, but I was happy that he played, you know, the ones I wanted to hear. So yeah, it was great. Just overall a great concert.
Were people bothering Chalamet or were they cool?
Because he would like, he came in like right before the concert started. And so I think probably to avoid all of that. And then at the end of the show, as everybody was getting up, these two girls like talked to him for, you know, a few minutes, and he didn't seem bothered by it. Like he was just talking to them. But other than that, like people were very focused on Bob. And it's also like a slightly older audience, so I think some people just like didn't notice. But yeah.
That's Willy Wonka over there. Yeah. Well, okay. So I have an answer for this one, and I've talked about the show before, and actually it's the background that the three of you are looking at the moment, which is when I saw Bob in the Roseland Ballroom in 1994 in New York. And as an encore, he brings out Neil Young and Bruce Springsteen.
That is absolutely unbelievable.
I mean, I'm just so ridiculous. And, you know, no announcement, no nothing. He just goes off the stage and we're like, okay, he's coming out for an encore. And then he comes out and you see one of the road crew pulls out two more microphones and you're just kind of like, what? And then Neil Young walks out and people just lose their minds. And then Bruce Springsteen walks out and it's just, you know, now, as awesome as that. And they think they sang, I know they sang Highway 61. I think they sang Watchtower. The two of them, Bob and Neil, don't sing. They just played guitar. Mm-hmm. And so as a bootleg, I got the bootleg of it a little while later. You don't even know because there's no intro and you just hear the crowd flip out and you're like, that's the moment that they came out, but there's no audible evidence that they were there. Now, as great as that experience was, because I've seen a Springsteen concert. I've never seen a Neil Young concert. I saw Neil Young at the 30th anniversary show. Being that close to them was amazing, and see the three of them together was unreal. But that isn't the experience that I'm even thinking of. And what happened was the show ran really late, right? It stuck because there was an opening act. Sheryl Crow was the opening act. So I think Bob didn't go on the stage till like 9 o'clock at night. And then the show ended at like 11 or whatever. It was fairly late. And my friend and I were walking. We left the Roseland Ballroom. We're walking back to the Port Authority. And we're just overwhelmed, right? You know, we're just overwhelmed at what we just saw. And we're walking and we're commiserating with each other. And there's this woman walking alongside us. She was not at the show. She just happened to be walking along, like up, I think it was 9th Avenue, in the same direction we were going. And she overhears us talking about Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, and Neil Young. And she's like, what are you guys talking about? And we said, oh, well, we just went and saw a Bob Dylan concert. Bruce Springsteen and Neil Young were there. And she was like, ah, come on. Like, she thought we were lying. And I don't know if she thought we were trying to impress her. I mean, we were talking amongst ourselves. I don't know what she dismissed us as like, oh, come on. Yeah, whatever. And right as she started to finish her thought, we walked by a little bodega and a guy had a radio on. And on the radio was some disc jockey from New York saying, hey, if you were at the Roseland Ballroom, you just heard Bob Dylan bring out Bruce Springsteen and Neil Young. And we got audible confirmation that we were not making this up.
Oh,
and
God.
It could not have been timed better. And
it's amazing.
We felt so satisfied because we were like, we're not making this up. Like, here it is. And, you know, related to that, I've lived within 2 hours of New York my whole life. I love being there. And Allison, you live there. Do you all live there? Do you all live in New York?
Yeah.
Yep.
You all live in there. Okay. I love that city. I love being there. I've had a lot of great times there. One of the few things that I am sad about that I'm moving away is I will not have access to New York the way I do now. I haven't visited it as much times as I should have considering, but I've always loved visiting that city. And that was like one of the great New York experiences I've ever had to come out of that show, have that experience, just be so overwhelmed and then have it confirmed by a radio live. It was just, it's the one thing I think about the most when I think about seeing Bob live.
So you couldn't script that better. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, the timing of it was absolutely unreal that she was, oh, you guy. Yeah, sure, guys. And then, hey, have you heard? Unreal. If you put it in a movie, it would be like, that's pretty cliche. So anyway, that's my favorite Bob live experience. So, all right. So next up, Melissa, let me start with you. What Bob song would you most like to hear in concert? And again, that can be a song he's never done that you've never heard, or just, it could be any answer. You could take that any way you want.
I just went with like, I don't know how many times he's played these. I know some of these, I'm sure he's played a lot, but like, I just went with my gut in terms of like, I haven't heard him play it and I just want to hear it. If You See Her, Say Hello, I think is my choice. I was also considering Rainy Day Woman because I would love to hear 82-year-old Bob Dylan say, "Everybody must get stoned." But yeah, but I think If You See Her, Say Hello, just simply because I love that song. And specifically the like outtake version, I like more than the album version. But yeah, it's just a great song and I love it. So I want to hear him play it.
Yeah, he's done it. Not much, though. Yeah, not much. So, okay. Rebecca?
I know that he's played Desolation Row a lot, but I've never seen it. And I know he's played it a lot because I've gone on YouTube and watched hours of Bob Dylan playing Desolation Row. I love how he delivers the lines now, like in late stage Bob Dylan. There's a bunch of videos from like 2019 when he played it. And it just brings back the humor of it, which you can hear in like the very early times when he was playing it. The audience was responding with laughter at some of the lines. And I think it's so great and so playful to engage with such like a cerebral type song that's very fantastical with like these interjections of what was like pop culture at the time. And when he's just singing it nowadays, he does it like in a really silly voice. He does the breaks up the lines in really funny ways. So yeah, I would love to see him play that live.
What do you think about the versions he does that like are so truncated? Does that bother you? Does it, you know, because like the like the MTV Unplugged version like is like half the song or something.
True. I'm like, play the whole dang thing. We want to hear it. We love, and he never plays the Ezra Pound and T.S. Eliot verse at all. I think he thinks it's stupid now. Like he was just trying to be pretentious when he wrote it. But I like pretentious. That's why I like Bob Dylan.
Yeah, it worked the first time. All right, Allison?
I'm going to cheat slightly with my answer because I'm not desperate, but it's that I would take anything at all off of Modern Times. I've never heard him do a Modern Times song live. That's like my top, one of my top three like Dylan albums, and I would take off of that. Thunder on the Mountain would be great, but like literally anything at all he'd want to do off of that album, I'll take, because I just want something off of that, especially with the band that he has now and the arrangements that he's been doing lately. I think some of those songs could be really cool.
You need to bring that record with you and just like wave it.
Play
you
know, it.
Like in the crowd. Play it up like that.
How to guarantee he would never play it ever.
You're
probably.
Right.
Probably. Play us something we've heard of. Okay. So next up, this one. Okay. This question. Give me, we'll start with you, Rebecca. Give me, and everyone here, your most unpopular Dylan take. And again, that can be however you choose to define that question.
This is really hard. I feel like I spend so much of my life trying to fit in and agree with everyone's opinions. I must say I'm a follower, but I guess some people find this controversial. I am not a fan of Heath Ledger's part of I'm Not There. I love the movie and it's absolutely my least favorite part of the movie. But I just talked to someone and he was like, "This is the best part. I'm living it right now." And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not a misogynistic dude in his 30s. So I don't really relate to it. And I also don't totally see the Dylan in it. Like, whereas every other part of it, it's pretty easy to see the parallels with things Dylan has said or done. I just really struggle with that one. But I feel terrible saying that because I love Heath Ledger. I know he was the second choice for the role, and it was the last movie premiere he went to before he died. So it's like a really meaningful, special thing in his career. But I just think maybe he wasn't right for it, or I just don't like that part of the movie. That's it. That's my hot take.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Allison?
I don't know exactly how unpopular this is, but I think the thing that I was thinking about was I agree, at least to a certain extent, what Joni Mitchell said about him a couple years ago, which was that he is a deception and not a very good guitar player. I don't think she meant either of those things as the kind of criticisms that people have blown them up to be or wanted them to be, for one thing. And for another, I don't think either of those things make Dylan a less interesting or less important performer. I think there's a kernel of truth to them. Both of those things are true about Bob Dylan, but that at the same time, that doesn't change my perception of how important or influential he is. I don't think that's all that controversial, though. I don't know that I have anything that hot of a take.
No, I'm not looking to make enemies here with anybody. So yeah. All right, Melissa, what about you?
Yeah, I don't know. This one was hard too, because I don't know how many like really detailed takes that I have, like, and to compare them against the opinions of especially like other Bob fans, because like theoretically you could say a hot take is that like his concerts and the way that he performs now is really good and fantastic, because like a lot of the general public could say that it's bad or that he doesn't sound good anymore or whatever, or play the hits, you know. But obviously that's not like a hot take within the circle or like anybody who would be listening to this. But the only thing I could kind of think of that might be a hot take is that, with the exception of like one line, I guess, I think that the best version of Tangled Up in Blue is just like the studio album, like the album version. Just because, like, I don't know. I mean, I would love to hear Tangled Up in Blue in concert. Like, maybe that should have been my answer, because that would be insane to hear Tangled Up in Blue. But, and there are like great lines here and there in the other versions that he's done. But I just think like the best version is the album version. I don't know. I enjoy it the most. I think it's the most like thought out one. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, obviously over the course of 300 episodes, I've uttered some unpopular Dylan takes. The one that people really seem to not react well to is when I suggest that there are some songs in his canon that are not good. That really seems to rankle people. And when someone has done anything 500 times, there's going to be some clunkers. That's just human nature. Mm-hmm. Yes, anyone can get anything from any song, and I would never take that away from anybody. But I think there are some, just a very few, very few, but there are a couple that are not good. And people really, and again, a lot of that is like Twitter brain or social media brain of people, where it's, you know, well, how can you say, you know, it's all brilliant. Well, it can't all be brilliant. Because if it's all brilliant, then none of it's brilliant. The whole point of the brilliance is that it's the stuff that stands out. Now, I think Bob's batting average is beyond anyone else's, pretty much, in all of recorded history. But there's just every so often, even something as benign as when, I think a couple of months ago, I ranked the Street Legal songs, my favorite to least favorite. And like, I forget, awesome. I think I put New Pony as the least favorite. And people were like, what the F is wrong with you? I'm like, I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm just saying it's my least favorite of the other, you know, this is a record that has, we better talk this over and changing of the guards. Like, what, you know? So I just don't, that's such a weird thing of like, but again, anyway, I will go to my, as much as I am quote unquote famous for making fun of Joey, I still say his worst song is Ballad in Plain D. I just think that song is just utterly worthless and mean-spirited and terrible. And Bob should have left it off the album. There you go. My God.
I'll add on to mine a little bit and say that everybody loves this might actually be like an unpopular opinion, because everybody loves Idiot Wind and I don't like that song. And
wow. Yeah. See, now that's an unpopular take, Melissa.
I know, which is crazy. Like, I was listening to that album the other day, and like, that is like a no skips album, obviously, except for Idiot Wind for me. Like, I don't know why. Like, and I see your reaction, Rebecca. I know that you don't agree with me.
It's a spicy take. I like that you have convictions.
Yeah, I just like, I mean, I understand people liking it, but it just annoys me. And I don't know.
Wow. Okay. Fair enough. Hey, look, I mean, Henry Bernstein says he doesn't like Lily Rosemary and the Jack of Hearts. He's wrong. He's just incorrect. But what can I tell you? He's a brilliant man, but he just, and that one thing, he loses me. So, okay. Well, I hope that question wasn't terribly painful for all of you. So, all right. So the last question, I'll start with you, Allison. If you could sit and have lunch with any woman from Bob's life, who would it be? And the reason I put in the question lunch is because this is not an interview. This is not for posterity. This is not for you to use in some sort of other, you know, forum. This is just a chat you're having with someone from Bob's life, and anything said would be between the two of you. And so what, who person would you like to have that kind of interaction with?
It's definitely Susie Bacciolo, 100%. She was one of my, she and her book were one of my gateways into Bob. And, you know, I read that when I first moved to New York, and I love everything about her. It would definitely be Susie.
Okay. Melissa?
I'm going to be just like very predictable and just say Joan Baez, because I was thinking of other ones being like, oh, it'd be more interesting or like more niche to say this person or that person. But like, it's Joan. She's so cool and so interesting. And I love her, like, obviously individually as an artist as well. So I just love to have a chat with her. I think we'd get along.
I'm sure you would. Rebecca?
I picked Desiree, his daughter, one of his daughters. I think she has such an interesting life. I've listened to some interviews with her. She mostly does like theater and singing for like the children. Like, she's a very charitable person. She had one cameo in like Pete Davidson's show recently. So
really?
Like, her life is so interesting and also like kind of mysterious. Obviously, she was born and grew up in like a time in Bob's life that we don't know a lot about. So in terms of her relationship to Bob, that would be pretty interesting. But she also seems like a really interesting person in her own right. And she wrote a really beautiful caption on Instagram for, I think, one of Bob's birthdays recently. And it was so beautiful. And like, it shows that she has a really special relationship with him that, you know, is not in the media at all for a good reason. So I'd just be curious to talk with her and like see what her life is like. And she had the gay wedding that Bob didn't attend. And so I want to know what's the tea behind that?
Yeah.
That's a great answer. That was my runner up. My ultimate pick, I picked his mom because I just think what. I mean, obviously, you're saying like Desiree, like she has a relationship to him that only a couple other women are going to have, right? He only has, he has two other daughters, right? He has the adopted daughter. And then didn't he have one on his own? One, him and Sarah had a biological daughter as well. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I believe so in my Googling.
Right? Yeah, I think so. Right. I think Sarah had a daughter when they met, right, and he adopted her. And then I think they had a daughter on their own. So he has three daughters. So there are three women on the planet that can call Bob Dylan their father. One woman out there can say, I gave birth to Bob Dylan. I raised Bob Dylan. And I would love to have known what was that like, having had that perspective with him, of seeing him as a boy, a child, you know, a toddler, a teenager, and then going on and seeing people say the things about him that they have said, that he's this oracle. He's a, you know, he meets presidents. He meets, you know, all these things. And you're the person that you're like, that's Bobby, you know? And the fact that he seemed to have had a very good relationship with her throughout the decades. She appeared on stage and stuff like that. And I always find it so completely charming that he took her to the Kennedy Center honors. When he got that, you know, he gets to sit three seats down from the president of the United States. And who does he bring? His mom. I just thought that to be so adorable. So, Beatty Zimmerman would have been my pick. So, okay. Well, those are my questions. Thank you all. Those are all fantastic answers, except for Melissa's about Idiot Win. So we're going to move on to the questions that you all prepared. And Allison, why don't we start with you, your first question for the group?
Sure. Do I answer my own question first, or do I have other people
answer? I think you should answer your own question first, since you wrote.
Okay. I have five questions here. They're all over the place. They make very little sense. First is a game that I have played for years now, which is, who would you add to the Traveling Wilburys and why? And I picked someone that I actually think would not fit in at all, but I think it would be really fun to throw a wrench into things and throw some chaos into the mix, and that's Elvis Costello. I feel like that's kind of nuts. And I feel like he would not get along with certain people in the group, and he'd get along with other people, and it would be a shit show, really.
That's a great secret. That's a great idea. All right, Melissa, who do you think should be added to the Wilburys?
This is such a hard one, because it's such like a perfect little group. But I think I would add, and I think he would fit in well, maybe not like personality wise, but Michael Nesmith, formerly of the Monkees.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, he was already part of a group and didn't gel very well. And by all accounts, he was hard to work with. But I think that his sound, like during that, like in the 80s, like during that same time, kind of would have mixed well with what they wanted to do. And his like aesthetic, and at the time he was doing like MTV and like all that music, like the music video stuff that was really like cutting edge. And I think that he would fit in well with them. And like, maybe if he had the opportunity to be in a little group with one of the Beatles, he would be a little bit happier. And I love Michael Nesmith. I love his solo music. If anybody's listening to this and also loves Michael Nesmith's music, please hit me up. And yeah, I think he'd be a great addition. Love him.
That's a great pick. My pal David H. Gutierrez, who's been on the show a bunch of times, bought me a Mike Nesmith record, and it was terrific.
Which
I loved
one?
It. I don't remember. I wish I could remember. It's packed up in a box. This is removing, but I've listened to it a bunch of times, and I'm like, this is really good. You know,
I have like a bunch of Nesmith bootlegs that I made, and I'll send them to you, Rob. Just let me know.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
they're
good,
really
good stuff. So, all right, Rebecca, what about you?
Jack White. There was recently a couple tracks from when Bob and Jack White performed together in like the early 2000s, and I was just blown away. Like, this is a perfect synergy of like music and vibes. The fact that Jack White was in Killers of the Flower Moon, I feel like he's totally in the universe. And yeah. I guess it's kind of like out of time. It's fantasy, as I said. But I love Jack White. I think he would be a perfect addition.
That's fun. That would certainly interject a jolt of energy into it, right? Yeah. Wouldn't it? That would be pretty amazing. I actually had an answer for this, and I tried to stay within the reality of the question of like who was around during the Wilburys era, like would have been there. And my addition was Bonnie Raitt. I just thought it would have been fun to have a woman in the Traveling Wilburys, and her sound is, you know, fits in with the Wilbury sound. She was at the time that her record was being produced by Don Was. And so that's the connection to Bob. You know, I don't even know if she's even knows Bob or anything. I mean, they must have had some interaction over the years, but I just thought that would be kind of fun just to have her kind of energy, her bluesy energy in the Wilburys. But I like all those. Elvis Costello would be just nuts, you know.
So we've just created a new super group of sorts.
Oh man, it'd be a great group. So okay, all right, Rebecca, what's your first question?
Oh yes, okay. What do you think you and Bob would argue or disagree about? This is actually like a kind of a difficult question for me, because so many of the things that Bob says that I disagree with, I'm just like, but it's Bob Dylan. Like, you can't ever take it seriously. But I think I would ask him some questions about stuff he said about women in general in the past. Maybe how does he feel about feminism these days? I'd love to know. But I also, like, you know, I wouldn't get too mad at him. I get that he's kind of a extremely old man.
So, Melissa, this was a tough one to answer, I have to say. Melissa, what was your answer to this?
I hate to say it. I don't have an answer, but not because I'm like, I agree with everything Bob says. Like, it's not that. I just like couldn't think of anything. And I didn't do my research for Googling like things that Bob Dylan said that I don't agree with. I don't know. I think that it's hard, like you said, Rebecca, because like half of the things he says, I feel like he just said them, especially stuff in like the 60s, 70s. He just said them to like get a reaction out of people, or like just to say them like recreationally. So it's kind of hard to be like, I disagree with that thing that he said, because first of all, he was like 24. And second of all, he like, it was a little hard to tell like what was his actual convictions and what, he was just like saying. I don't know. I guess at a certain point, like when he was moving away from the protest music, like how like negatively he was speaking of protest music, saying that it was like useless and everything. I don't 100% disagree with that, but I do think that like there's a little bit more power in it and art and protest art in general than like he was giving it credit for. But that's also like he was having a reaction. So
I also have, like, in the 80s, during the Christian era, he went on one crazy rant about gay people and how the city of San Francisco is, like, you know, being taken over by the devil or whatever.
Oh, it's God. A den of iniquity and all that shit.
Yeah. So I disagree with that, but I have a hard time believing that's something he really believed or still does today. But I guess my questions would be answered in my lunch with Desiree that I would have earlier in the day.
Because he says that, and then like he also has quotes saying that, like, you know, like it doesn't matter, like love is love, basically. Yeah. So he has like contradictory quotes all over the place. So
definitely,
which is fine. Like, I mean, we all do, you know.
Contains multitudes. Allison, so okay, the magazine hires you to talk to Bob. What are you going to dare disagree with them about?
This is a trick question because I would never disagree with Bob Dylan about anything. whatever you say, sweetheart, like that would be my answer. But I had to sort of think about this from like a very non-journalistic, non-work point of view, because I don't think I could do that. So I sort of thought about this question in terms of like, okay, if I was like casual friends with Bob Dylan right now, like what would we argue over maybe? And I don't know, I feel like it'd be over something kind of stupid, you know, like we know he likes Metallica and I don't like Metallica, so I feel like I don't want to go to the Metallica concert with you, like that's not my thing. I feel like we'd argue over something like that.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah, keep it small, you know. My answer to this would be, and this is more that I disagree with him about, not like there's not a stance I would take, although like I said, I found it interesting that like when they did the bootleg series of the Christian era, they left all those speeches out from the concert. You know, they didn't keep that stuff with good reason. But the one thing about Bob that I find frustrating, and I think I would chide him on in this insane scenario where I'm talking to Bob Dylan and I'm arguing with him, is I think he can be knee-jerk, contrary for its own sake sometimes. And it's kind of like when we talked about Melissa in the Last Waltz concert, you know, where it's like, he's playing with the band for the final time. And what does he choose to sing? Hazel. Like, really? Hazel. That's, you know, like, and it's almost like, well, that's not what, you know, people are expecting me to sing the hits. So I'm not going to sing the hits. Like, well, all right. You know, like sometimes I feel like just being contrary for its own sake is as tiresome as constantly just doing what people want you to do. So that's like the one area of him. And sometimes, like, you know, when he says stuff in interviews, like when he called the Johnny Cash records that he did the Rick Rubin low grade stuff, I remember thinking that's an incredibly dickish thing to say. And that's rude to Johnny Cash, who you supposedly idolize. Mm-hmm. And I know, I think part of that is he says it to be outrageous and to kind of throw. I think once he gets an interview that he doesn't like, I think he just kind of shuts off and starts issuing crazy things to say just to almost toy with them, and I find that to be a little tiresome. I'm like, you know what, I understand you're interviewed a million times, must be kind of boring, but you don't have to be rude sometimes some of that stuff. So that's the kind of the thing I would chide him on. But
that's
that would,
a
again,
great answer. I totally agree, because that really tells you, like, it's about something fundamental to his character that definitely would come up a lot if you were hanging out with Bob all the time. Like, why are you throwing a tantrum right now, sir?
Yeah, I just, you know, it's just a little like, oh, okay, what's the, really, you know, okay. So, okay, Melissa, what's your first question?
Okay, my first one is what's your favorite unauthorized Dylan media? Like a book, movie, a song about him? I was just kind of thinking of anything about Bob and surrounding Bob that isn't like coming from his camp. And my official answer is I'm Not There, because, like, pretty sure it had nothing to do, like, with him or anything. Just because I love that movie. I think it's the perfect, like, distillation of his career and his sort of, like, mystique and character. In the fact that it's just, it is a character, like it's different characters and it's never Bob Dylan, because he has never really been like one person. And yeah, it's my favorite. It's so good. And I was also thinking about the John Lennon song, Serve Yourself. Do you guys know that song?
Yeah.
Which is like, it's not particularly good, but it's like awesome that it exists, I think. But yeah, so I'm Not There is my answer.
All right. Rebecca?
I'm Not There so great. I may have misinterpreted this question, but maybe it'll work. You guys know that song, Oh, and I Want to Be With You.
Oh, Hootie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hootie, that song. I can't believe that's something I might disagree with Bob about, that those guys got sued because they love Bob Dylan, because they included the lyric that's like, Bobby's so cool, and he sued him about it. Are you kidding me?
That was a dick
he
move.
Did? I don't know about this.
They got, because they said Tangled Up in Blue. They were like, that's plagiarism.
And they quote Idiot Wind. He quote two lines from Idiot Wind in it.
Yeah. It's a whole tribute to Bob Dylan. I love it. I love this song. Post Malone did a cover of it recently, which I also really dig. I guess they sorted out the legal issues if he was able to do that. But yeah, that verse in Only Want to Be With You. I also like the line where he says, I'm such a baby because the dolphins make me cry. That's really sweet.
Hell yeah.
That was, when I heard that he sued Hootie, I was like, oh, fuck, come on. All right. I mean, I guess you have to do that maybe to keep other people from doing it. Because, I mean, like, literally they are quoting Dylan song lyrics. But still, it just did seem like.
Well, he quotes people all the time.
Yeah, right. Again, this Bob,
so,
you know.
Like, so he can do it, but Hootie and the Blowfish can't. Like,
yeah,
on.
That's, you know, like, okay.
He literally has a song called I Contain Multitudes. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, but, right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, he's not sued by Thoreau or any type of suit. All right, Allison.
I'm going to take it back again. It's Susie Bertolo's memoir. I think, you know, we were talking about this idea of, you know, certain women having a certain glimpse into who Bob Dylan is very personally. And I think that book in particular is a really, really great window into, you know, his personality, not only just as a young man who didn't really know who he was yet and was still very much figuring himself out, but also, you know, the kind of person he was around somebody that he really loved for maybe the first time in his life. So it's that book. I have a signed copy of it. It's my pride and joy, and I will recommend that over and over.
Did you meet her and get
no,
it signed?
I didn't. It was a gift.
Oh, okay. Before. Wow.
Yeah, I wish, but no.
That's amazing. Okay. I had a tough time with this one, Melissa. I thought this was a really interesting question. I went real small, and I picked the single line from Ricky Nelson's song Garden Party. I don't know if any of you know this song, you know, Ricky Nelson was a pop star in the 50s and a TV star, and then he kind of had a tough time kind of finding a new music career, and then he came back in 1979 with a song called Garden Party, where he tells the story of doing this big concert. It was this big, like, multi-musician event, and apparently there was a party either after the show or before the show. I think it was after the show, because the show didn't go well for Ricky Nelson. Like, people wanted to, they just wanted to hear his hits, which, you know, we're still living with that in 2024. But he has a line about who's at the party. And he mentions, he says, over in the corner, much to my surprise, was Mr. Hughes in Dylan's shoes wearing his disguise. And it's, I love it. I love the line. It's so gentle of like saying, oh, there's Bob, but he's being Bob. He's got his mask on. And, you know, Bob would go on to cover Ricky Nelson songs during the 1986 tour, and Lonesome Town and some other songs. He was a big fan of Ricky Nelson's music. And I just, there's something very gentle about it. It's not meant, if you listen to the whole song, it's not meant as a, you know, knock on Bob. It's just the kind of, like, he paints this really great picture of like, John Lennon was there and Bob Dylan was there, and oh, there's Bob, and Bob's got his mask on. And I just find that to be a really wonderful observation in just a single line in a song. So I've always liked that bit from Ricky Nelson. So, okay. Next up, Allison, your next question.
Yeah. My next question was, what was everybody's favorite Bob collaboration? And that could mean all sorts of different things, I'm sure. But for me, it's definitely It's the tour with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Those are my two greatest loves of my entire life that I'm mad that I wasn't alive for that tour. I think there was just something, the chemistry there. I mean, Bob and the band is one thing, but there was something else that was even a little bit slightly different with Bob and the Heartbreakers, especially at a time when, as he said, he didn't feel all that great about being on stage and playing those songs. So for me, it's that tour. It's the True Confessions tour.
Rebecca.
Fiona Apple on Rough and Rowdy Ways.
Oh, yeah.
You don't hear her, but you hear her. Like, oh. I think Rough and Rowdy Ways is definitely one of my favorite albums of his. And I love Fiona Apple. Like, even just imagining them in the studio together, like figuring out how things should sound. I would love to be a fly on the wall of those sessions. But I'm so glad that she's there and that they're, you know, friends. And he recognizes, like, the genius of Fiona Apple enough to have her collaborate with him.
How cool is that, right? You know, like, it's
so
unfortunate
awesome.
That one picture we have of the two of them, Bob's in his Joker makeup. And I'm like, why does he look like
Bob
that?
Looks psychotic.
Like, why is he, like, he why are you like ruining this picture? It's so strange. So, okay. Melissa, what's your answer to this?
Mine is anything that him and George Harrison did together, but particularly right after George left the Beatles. And just like around that era of when he was making All Things Must Pass and they were like writing songs together and like Behind That Locked Door being about Bob. And I love listening to the outtake of If Not For You, like Bob's version of If Not For You, or, you know, it's his song. So the outtake of If Not For You. And in the beginning, you can hear him go, "You ready, George?" And because he's like playing guitar with him. Oh my God, it's so good. I love it. Yeah, because I love George. And I love Bob. So I love that they like became friends. And I think it's awesome that George was like a fangirl of his. And then, or like, I guess all the Beatles were, but like George was like constantly talking about, like, if you watch Get Back, he is constantly like this one Bob Dylan song, you know, like Dylan. And I love that. And I think it's great that they became besties.
Yeah. I was tempted to say the Woolberries because it's Bob and George, you know, it's just the, I mean, you know, like, how do you, the level of fame those two achieved, the level of artistic achievement, and the fact that they could be friends and work together and not be in competition is staggering, you know, because you think their egos must be huge and yet they could sit and do this. But I didn't want to, I don't know. I was like, oh, that's too obvious or whatever. And I'm glad I have another answer because you've already said it. My favorite collaboration is actually not even a collaboration at all. Is No Direction Home with Scorsese, which, as we know, was not a collaboration because he didn't work with Martin Scorsese. Martin Scorsese didn't shoot any of that footage, but he handed it over to Marty. Marty, I'm saying Marty like I know him. He handed it over to Martin Scorsese to do with, presumably, as Martin Scorsese pleased. And to me, it remains one of, Melissa, when I talked about this, when we did the episode on it, it remains my favorite piece of like Bob video form because we just get extended footage of him talking, and he's an interesting man to listen to. He knows how to tell a great story. He's funny. His timing is impeccable, and I just wish there was more of that. I don't even want to hear. I would love to hear him talk about things not related to him. You know, like, I would just live an hour. Bob, talk about movies. Bob, give me five movies you love. Like, what would that sound like? That would be amazing. You know, or Bob, let's talk about travel. What are your favorite places you've been to? What would that sound like? You know, like, that's to me, he handed it over to Martin Scorsese and was like, shape it, turn this into something. So that to me is my favorite collaboration. Again, even though they never actually.
Yeah. I mean, and if anybody can like make Bob talk about anything and make it sound interesting, it would be Marty. Like,
oh,
so just good.
You know, my Bob Dylan quoting Tommy Makem, where he's like, you know, Bob, no peace, no this, no that. Bob's just like, right. Like, that's my favorite. His timing is just as a comedian, he is just top notch. So, okay. Who's next up? Allison? I'm sorry, Rebecca, what's your next question?
My question is, what era or relationship would you want to see portrayed on film? This kind of has come up in the discourse because, I don't know, I've seen some people be like, oh, this with this Timothy movie, we're getting like the same era that we've seen portrayed many times, and there's much more interesting parts of his life. But for me, I gotta stay on brand. I would love to see a background of Hearts of Fire, like around the filming of that. I think it would be amazing, sort of like a Disaster Artist to the Room equivalent. I think that would be really interesting to see. And the fact that this always blows my mind, Jacob Dylan was 17 when that movie came out. And like, can you imagine how embarrassing that must have been for him to have his father in this movie with a 19-year-old love interest? And it's just terrible and it never gets released. I'd love to see what was going on behind the scenes there.
It would be amazing to see that. I mean, absolutely yeah. Amazing. Okay, Melissa, your answer?
I said, I don't know how interesting it would be. I don't know. I said just his Christian era, like his religious era, because it's such a, like, not, people don't really talk about it that much. Like, it's an infamous thing that happened, but people don't really talk about the actual, like, time that much in his personality or whatever. They're like, oh yeah, remember when Dylan like became super evangelist or whatever. And I think it would be interesting to see just like what caused that, like what made him do that all of a sudden, especially considering I know that he's not like, he didn't grow up like practicing Jewish, but like the fact that he's Jewish and then he's just like, I'm gonna be really Christian is so interesting. And like, I don't know if I really want that many like movies of people portraying Bob Dylan, but like if they're gonna do it, it would be crazy to go super left field, like make zero money movie about him being super Christian.
Great. Allison, what about you?
Rebecca, you kind of brought up this idea a little earlier about how, you know, you didn't feel like Keith Ledger's part in I'm Not There really kind of did it for you for that particular portion of Dylan's life. And I totally see that. So I'd love to see a maybe different reworking of that. And I was thinking about this also too, because I finished Robbie Robertson's book not all that long ago. And the way he talks about those years and what was going on, you know, the like camaraderie of everybody living in the same town and coming over for lunch and spending the day and the dogs are around and the kids are playing and that whole, and part of me feels like I'm prying if I ask for film, you know, a movie to be made about this portion of Dylan's life. But there was something pretty magical and special about those couple of years, and especially the way that Robbie talks about it. So I'd love to see that, those couple of years maybe put on a screen.
That's great. My answer for this one was in the wake of the We Are the World documentary that Netflix has put out, which was really fun. I really want to see like a 5-episode Traveling Wilburys documentary, you know. I just, and playing by the rules, you know, reality, like we've only got 2 Wilburys left, unfortunately, but get Bob and get Jeff Lynn and even grab like Michael Palin, who wrote the liner notes and is in the Handle with Care video, and get Jim Keltner and
yeah,
get Dave Stewart, you know, like get everybody. And there must be footage of George and probably Tom Petty at the very least talking about it, because George was like the biggest Wilburys booster of all of them. I just want to see Netflix can do 4 episodes on like a guy that won a fighter jet through Pepsi. They can like that minor thing. Do 4 episodes on how the Wilburys came together. I just want, you know, how many times again we're going to see a Beatle and Bob Dylan together with Roy Orbison. You know, it's just amazing. So while we still have some people left to talk about it, I would want to see that. I mean, so that would be,
wouldn't it kind of slay if they made instead of like Tweeter and the Monkey Man, a movie about like the fake band of the Traveling Wilburys, of like the different Wilburys?
Yeah, it'd be like an It's Always Sunny kind of thing, like New Jersey, like
yeah, I'm like that'd be so, of like the fake members of the band, like that'd be so cool, like Uncle Wilbury or whatever.
So yeah, sorry. just make it all up, right? Exactly, that'd be fantastic. Oh man, yeah, man, I want to see that more than what I just suggested. So okay,
sick. That would be amazing.
Melissa, your next question.
Okay. My next one is your favorite piece of Bob memorabilia, either that you own or you wish you had. I'm actually going to get up a second and grab mine.
I like this question. This is a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't think of it before to grab it, but okay. I have this simple this picture of Bob framed, and it's the for those listening, it's the image. It's from the New York Times. It's him as a young man, and it's the one that is on the twink shirt that Rebecca made. But I've had this framed for like 3 years or something, maybe more at this point. I don't know. But I literally like, I just love this picture. I take this framed image with me everywhere. I went to Europe for 2 months for like a course, like post-grad type of thing. And the only personal thing that I brought except for clothes was this image. And I was like traveling in Ireland, like with this in my backpack. I'm like, why am I doing this? But it was worth it because I got in my little dorm room and it was the only thing I had in my room, just like sitting on top of the piano that was in there. And everybody that came in my room was like, what is this? One girl thought that it was, I said, that's Bob Dylan. And they said, she said, oh my God, I thought Bob Dylan was black. And it was incredible. Shout out Ari. And she, I think she thought that she was thinking of Bob Marley, but yeah, I love that. I just love it. It's not really like, I guess it's not really a piece of memorabilia, but you know, it's like,
no, it counts. No, yeah. No, it totally counts. I love that photo in that absent any context. It looks like a Dorothea Lange photo from the Great Depression.
Yeah, it really does. He's got the like Dust Bowl look to him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's totally awesome. And he looks so sad and lowly. And like, I need to give him my change or something. It's awesome. It's so cool. And then just to be annoying, I'll say one more. I know I keep saying two things, but I'll kind of say my Bob Dylan tattoo, which Allison, you and I kind of have the same tattoo.
Do I we? I didn't even know that. Out. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah,
from, I have Get Born.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So from Don't Look Back. So I have that and I love that tattoo. Is my first tattoo and it's my favorite thing. And people constantly, strangers walk up behind me and go, look out. And it scares me. And then I remember. So, yeah.
Great. I love it. I love it. Rebecca?
My favorite is probably my Isle of Wight bootleg record that I have. It was the first one that I got. And it just made me feel so connected to, like, the Bob lore of bootlegging. Like, I think it's legit. It seems pretty old, and it's just, like, a black and white image on a big white record holder. And I love Isle of Wight. I love that the voice that he was doing while covering all the Highway 61 era songs. So yeah, that's probably my most treasured Bob object.
All right. Allison?
There's two things that if I had millions of dollars, I would buy, or I would kill someone to get them, either way. One is a Bob Dylan painting, like a real one, obviously. That would be cool as hell. The other, and I've said this on the show before, and I'm going to say it again, I'm going to keep saying it until somebody finally gives it to me, is sitting in the Dylan Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it's that black satin, like, bomber jacket, the 1968 yes, one with, like, the Pegasus on the back.
Yeah.
I'd do anything so cool to have that jacket. But I can't, so I guess my favorite is I keep my little this is so silly, like, press badge from Bob Dylan Center opening weekend. It says media and my name on it, and like every time I look at it, it reminds me of that super fun weekend where we all gathered and celebrated Bob Dylan. So that's my favorite.
That's a great, that's a, I, well, first of all, I was gonna say the jacket as well, but mm-hmm. I have another answer, but that's great. I think the badge is, that's terrific. I still have my program because it has my name in it. You know, mm-hmm. like, it's the only quote unquote official Bob Dylan anything with my name attached to it. So, yeah. No, I think that's fantastic. So my other answer, if not the jacket, which they should be selling in the gift store, you know, put enough with the calendars. Give me the bomber jacket for $199.99, whatever you got to charge. But one of the pieces I saw in the center was this big life-size cardboard record store display for Street Legal. Ooh. That they sent out as a graphic designer and someone who is obsessed with the marketing side of like movies and all that kind of stuff. I love all the mountain of ancillary material that Columbia Records must have had to have produced over 60 years for Bob's stuff, especially 60s and 70s. And they had a giant cardboard stand up of, you know, Bob looking to the side. And I'm like, I want that so badly. And I remembered, I think I even tweeted about it when I was still there. I mentioned that I want it so bad. And Craig Daniloff from FM Pods, this very network, said he has it. He says he has it. Yeah, he says he has it in storage somewhere. He has like a, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark type collection of stuff. He can only fit so much of it in his place. But he said he has it. And he said to me, I'll lend it to you for a little while if you want to have it. And I said, Craig, if you give it to me, you're not getting it back. So don't lend it to me. Don't lend it to me. You know, you're not getting it. I'm being totally honest. I will disappear to Florida with that thing. So forget it. So that, I think, I don't know why I'm so obsessed with that. I don't know. I guess maybe because I had a very, very, very brief flirtation with Columbia Records, showing them my work in the 90s. And I actually sat in the office of one of the guys that worked on his records. And it took all the self-control, professional self-control I could muster not to ask him, you know, like, what is it? Did you meet him? You know, like anything like that. I kept it cool. I never got any work, so I should have asked him anyway. But I don't know, I've always been fascinated by that side of it, of like, how do we market this? You know, how does Columbia Records take street legal? How do we sell this? You know, so that stand up would be my big thing. So, okay. I guess next, Allison, I guess your next question.
Yeah. It was, what is your favorite, do you have a favorite cover of a Bob song? And for me, I couldn't really narrow it down to a specific song, but I love, and especially it's been happening in more recent years, women covering Bob Dylan songs. I'm a huge fan of Chrissy Hynde's Standing in the Doorway collection that she did. I think that was 2 years ago now, 3 years. I love her voice on it. I love Chrissy Hynde just in general, and I think the versions she does of some of those songs are superb.
Rebecca?
For me, it's definitely Jeff Buckley, Mama, You've Been on My Mind. It is so beautiful. Yeah, I don't know what to say about it, but my runner-up is Stephen Malkmus doing Kate Blanchett's singing voice, and I'm Not There. I think it's such a good match for when she's singing Ballad of a Thin Man. And then on the record that was released along with the movie, he sings Can't Leave Her Behind, which is an unreleased song that we just see him composing in a hotel room. But yeah, those are the guys.
I've never actually heard that cover of Mom, You've Been on My Mind. I'll have to.
Me neither.
What?
Yeah.
You guys, you gotta get on this. It's so beautiful. I'm so happy to introduce it to you.
I have to check that out. Yeah, I've never heard that. Okay, Melissa?
Okay, I feel the same way about, like, women covering Dylan. Sometimes with men, it's like I have more of the, like, nobody sings Dylan like Dylan syndrome, where I'm like, this is good, but I'd rather just listen to Bob sing it. I love a lesser known one, I guess, Angel Olsen's cover of One Too Many Mornings. It's on some soundtrack for some show that Elizabeth Olsen, no relation, is in. No, wait, not Elizabeth Olsen. I don't know. Who's the actress that's in, like, Mad Men and stuff? I feel like it's Olsen.
Yeah, no, that's Elizabeth,
Elizabeth Olsen. Yeah. Yeah.
Elizabeth Holmes.
No.
No?
So, yeah, and anyway.
She's the one from
Mad Men. The actress in Mad Men. I don't know. It's in some show that she did. I don't know. Like, the cover on Spotify, that's the only reason I know. Like, the album cover on Spotify is that. But love Angel Olsen. Shout out Asheville, North Carolina. And it's just a beautiful cover. She has an amazing voice. And when I discovered that she did a Bob Dylan cover, I was so down. And it's amazing. I love it. I listen to it all the time.
I haven't heard that one either. I'll have to check that out. That's really good. My favorite is and will ever be at the Bob Dylan 30th anniversary concert, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Roseanne Cash, and Sean Colvin doing You Ain't Going Nowhere. It's one of my all-time favorite Bob Dylan songs, which I've talked about ad nauseum. They bring all the spirit and joyful, the joie de vivre to it. And they don't change the pronouns, which yeah. I love it. I can't stand it when a singer does that. Like, it's like, what? Who cares? Come on. Who cares? Who cares? You know, whether it's men singing about women or women or whatever. So I love that they sing, "Ooh-wee, my bride's going to come," you know, and it just, it's one of those things where I wish they had done a whole record. They had such a great collaboration that I wish they had done a whole record. And it is one of the few unresolved things that I have with the show as it's wrapping up, that I never got a chance to have any of those three on the show to talk about it. But I probably just would have embarrassed them, because I just would have gone on and on and on about how much I loved it. And, you know, as I mentioned before, I was there that night, and there was a lot of bad juju in the air, thanks to the booing of Sinead O'Connor. And it took a lot for the show to get back on track from my memory. And, you know, Neil Young helped with that. But when they came out, people just, it was just such a wonderful, positive experience. And so that is, I just love that version to absolute death. So, okay. Rebecca, your next question.
What age, Bob, would you most want to hang out with? I feel like we're probably going to have similar answers, but for me, it's definitely, I want to hang out with Greenwich Village Bob, crashing in people's houses on couches, watching him in those little clubs in New York, little cafes, and just seeing like how he made it in those first couple days through that first winter. And like, yeah, seeing him up close would be cool.
All right, Allison.
I'm going to go a couple years further beyond that and say I want to go on the road 65 and 66, be there in Britain for all of those shows. Maybe this Ooh. Is because I did recently just watch I'm Not There, and Cate Blanchett once again stole my heart. But which is not to say that every moment of that particular period was exactly pleasant or fun for everybody involved, but that's the place to be. That's where it's happening.
Are you imagining yourself in like an Almost Famous situation where you're young Cameron Crowe following Stillwater around or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to be. I've got to be.
That would be that scary, but great answer.
Terrifying, but fun.
Yeah. Okay, Melissa?
I guess I slightly interpreted this differently because I was just thinking about like purely if like who he was at the time was just like in front of me. I wasn't exactly thinking about like the possibility of going on tour or like hanging out with the people that was around him. So like, cause obviously then like the 60s, 70s would be awesome. But in terms of just like hanging out with, I said like 90s to early 2000s, Bob, just cause he seems chill and cool. And he's like that, like you were saying earlier, Rob, like that contrarian edge sort of wore off a little bit. And he's just kind of chilling. Like he's older now. He did Trouble in Wilburys. Like, I don't know. He seems chill. And like, I don't know. I'd rather hang out with that than like some dude that's super hyped up on cocaine all the time and like like locked in and like ready to like berate me at any moment. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like as tempting as it would be to say, you know, 1965 Bob at like the white hot apex of his fame. He was also a dick, and I don't want to get like a truth attack, you know, like I can't tolerate that. I couldn't tolerate wearing shoes that somebody made fun of, let alone Bob Dylan lacerating into me. I would just shrink it down. So no way. My answer would be kind of related to what you were saying, Melissa, about like chill Bob. Is I read an interview with, I think it was one of the band members. It couldn't have been Garnier because Garnier like never talks. But maybe it was Larry Campbell or Charlie Sexton, one of them, or anyway, one of the guys. But there was a thing where this is right around Love and Theft, where they were driving, him and Bob and a couple of the guys are in a convertible, apparently, right? And who knows if this story is true, but what the hell? But they're driving somewhere and a bunch of people swarm the car. And are like, Bob Dylan, Bob. And they're all excited. And they're like waving paper for him to sign and whatever. And it was such a throng of people that it freaked out some of the guys in the band a little. Like it was just like, it was very intense, very fast. And apparently Bob said to again, I don't remember what band member, but said something to the effect of, hey guys, like, don't worry about it. It's just love. It's just love. And they're trying to, it's all right. And I was like, I like that Bob. I like that, you know, that's the Bob that is completely comfortable with his legend now and it can drive around in a convertible and be cool. Like that's the Bob that I would want to sit in a diner with and talk about old movies, you know, because I just think he'd just be super cool. So yeah, it's the Chill Bob is the one that I would absolutely want to hang with. So that was my answer. So okay, Melissa, your final question.
Okay, my final question is, what is your Dylan White Whale? So like an unreleased song, an unreleased film or something, book. I'm gonna say oh, I had something in my head, but now I'm like second guessing it. I'm gonna just go classic. Actually, scratch that. I'm gonna say a 4K restoration of Ronaldo and Clara.
Mm.
Because even though we have the film, it's like horrible quality. And like, yes, it's 4 hours of not like of nonsense, sure. But like, I want 4 hours of nonsense of Bob in 4K and Miss Joan Baez and everything. So I think that that should be the next like Martin Scorsese like restoration project for his film foundation, and just like somehow figure out how to do that. That's my white whale.
That's an amazing answer. Yeah, the only version I've ever seen is like watching it through an ice cube. It's
oh yeah,
quality,
it's horrible.
Quality
you
is
can't
so
see
bad.
Yeah.
And the film's hard enough, you know, let alone having to strain your eye. Like, what am I looking at? I'm sorry, Allison. What's your Dylan White Whale?
Oh, it's if there is a Chronicles Part 2, I need it. I won't rest until it's until it's in my hands. There just has to be. I don't know what exists or doesn't exist. I just know that if that is a possibility, that's it for me. I need a Chronicles. I would accept another book of some variety, but I would love a Chronicles Part 2.
All right, Rebecca.
You guys are going to think I'm joking, but it's that damn shirt on Highway 61 cover.
That's valid.
I don't even know if it's a shirt or a jacket. There's been some images of him around the time wearing it, and every time I see it, I'm like, oh, it's so beautiful. It looks so shiny and soft. I need that shirt. That's my white whale of Dylan fashion.
I think it's a shirt. That's my hot take. It's got buttons.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah.
Jackets can have buttons.
Yeah, but they're little buttons. And okay. It's got a collar. Yeah.
All right. So, okay. My answer, Melissa, I kind of thought Ronaldo and Clara just because it deserves to be released. I mean, come on, you know. Mm-hmm. But I decided to go real small and I picked a single song, which is a song from, I mean, I'm not going to do the song, the supposed like post Street Legal songs, the I'm Cold stuff that like people still don't really, do they really exist? Do they not? I decided not even go that big. I went with a single song and it's from, it's not the Shot of Love sessions, but it was sessions that he did between Saved and Shot of Love, and on bootlegs, they kind of get lumped in with the Shot of Love stuff. And he does a song called Magic, which only exists in bootleg form. And much like Ronaldo and Clara, the quality I have is awful. It's almost impossible to even understand what he's saying. Apparently he hasn't even really worked out the words. So a lot of it is just kind of he's rolling sounds around in his mouth, except he's going to, you know, singing the refrain, ooh, magic. But it's a beautiful song. It sounds wonderfully romantic. When Bob is in a good mood and he's in love, I find him to be unbelievably charming, mm-hmm. right? Like when he just writes a straightforward, I'm happy in love song. I find those things to be, you know, see also you ain't going nowhere. I just, those are the things that give me such pure joy. And that song sounds like joy. Again, I can't make out the words, most of it, but it sounds like that. And I've never been able to find a good bootleg of it. And it was not included on that bootleg set from that era, which made me think it's never getting included. Like it's, maybe it's a song that Bob doesn't like and has personally nixed it. But I would kill to have a clean, listenable version of that song because I love it so, so much. And mm-hmm. it's just like completely removed from any of, you know, who knows? Well, they might be still releasing someday, but probably not.
And it's
got
to be out there somewhere.
It's got to be out there somewhere. I got it on a cassette from a friend and I was like, what is this? You know, and I tried to listen to the words and you just can't. Let it start. Dun, dun, dun. Like, that's it. I'm like, okay. but I love that song so much. So, okay. Next up, Allison.
My next question was, what is your favorite use of a Bob song in another movie or some other non-Bob setting? And for me, I was thinking about, and Melissa, you brought this up earlier, the little clip from, it's like not even 40 seconds long, of George Harrison singing Mama, You've Been On My Mind in Get Back lives rent-free in my head and has now for a couple of years. It's so good. It's like, and he does it so flawlessly. He just kind of like drops it in the middle while everyone else is chattering. He sings this most, like the most beautiful 30 seconds of song you could possibly imagine. And his bandmates are like, yeah, like whatever, we got shit to do. And everyone else is high and like not understanding what's going on. And George is like, let me just serenade you for a minute with this Bob song. And it's beautiful. And I would kill to have like a whole, I don't know, LP of some kind of just George Harrison doing stuff like that. It's so great.
Have you heard his cover of Mama, You've Been On My Mind that's on the, like, I don't remember what the album is called now, but it's, like, just a bootleg, early demos, George Harrison early demos thing.
I don't think I have. Now.
Girl!
No,
oh,
I
my God.
Too,
it doesn't sound exactly...
So far.
It doesn't sound exactly the same as, like, when he's doing it on Get Back, but it's... I mean, it's the whole song. Oh my God. Right. I'll link it to you.
Wow. that is, you know, it's so funny when I watched the Get Back thing, I love the Beatles, you know, I mean, who doesn't, but like, I did find it a little tough to get through, you know, cause it's like, this is a lot of them just noodling around. But at the same time, if someone said, hey, Peter Jackson has 8 hours of Blood on the Tracks being made, I'd be like, sign me up. Where would it be?
Peter Jackson has 8 hours of the Wilburys. Be like, yeah.
What streaming service do I need to sign up to do it? Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely do that. All right. So, Rebecca, what's your answer to this?
Okay. There's the show that it's been off the air for a while now. The Young Pope, starring Jude Law. It is an amazing show, HBO show. It's kind of like House of Cards, but set in the Catholic Church. And the theme song is an instrumental version of All Along the Watchtower. It is so cool. It's by this artist called Devlin. And the way it starts, it's just Jude Law as the Pope walking down a hall in the Vatican. And like behind him, these paintings are like exploding. And it's so badass, you guys. I can't convey how cool it is, but it's perfect. It's a perfect use of Bob Dylan.
Cool. That's I've heard of that show, but I never saw it. So that's
recommend.
No idea. But that song has been used in both The Young Pope and Battlestar Galactica. I mean, that's a pretty durable song. Melissa?
Okay. I don't have an answer for this. That's the long and short of it. I can't think of anything. And I think it's just because I just like when Bob sings. I don't know. But also, I just feel like I was trying to think of something that I could have done research and been like, what was it in? But like, I couldn't think of anything off the top of my head, and I feel like nothing sprang forward. I was just like, I don't have an answer. I don't know.
All right, I have an answer, but I also have something else to add, just because it came up literally between when you wrote this question, Allison, and when we're recording it. Was I've mentioned on the show, I'm fascinated by like what Bob's office is like the licensing office. Like, what's that life like? You know what I mean? Like, how many people is he employed? Do they run it by him? Does he have to sign off on everyone? Maybe not now since he sold the catalog, but in the old days, did he like literally sign off on everything? I don't know. I would have loved to have talked to somebody from that office. And so my wife and I started watching Sons of Anarchy, the FX show about bikers in California. I don't know how we got started on it, but we did. And then we binge watched all 7 seasons in like a month or something. And there's a lot of Bob covers in that show, a lot. There's Watchtower, there's Boots of Spanish Leather. And So anyway, at one point, it's not Bob singing. They probably can't afford that. So it's people covering Bob. But there is an episode featuring a cover of Boots of Spanish Leather. And as that is playing, what we are watching on screen is a member of the motorcycle club who has since been incarcerated, being gang raped by fellow inmates. And I'm thinking, does Bob Dylan know this is what this is being used for? I mean, does that get to him? Like at what point did they say, you know, what would fit here? Bob Dylan's really sweet song about the love of his life, who went to Italy. That would fit with this scene of horrible, horrible sexual violence. I'm just like, what is happening? I don't understand. So I would love to just know, does Bob have to sign off on things like that? But okay. My favorite use, though, in a movie is Shelter from the Storm in Jerry Maguire. That movie hasn't aged super well. I watched it not that long ago, and I was like, it's not as great as I remember it. But it remains the movie I have seen in the theater the most times. I saw it 10 times in the theater. When it came out, I just loved it. And a close friend and I loved it. And we would just go see it every week. It kept playing because it was a huge hit. And we just kept going every week. And in fact, she and I saw the last showing on a Thursday night before they replaced it on Friday with a new movie. And the ending, for anyone who hasn't seen it, it wraps up with Tom Cruise and Renee Zellweger and her son, and they kind of had this happy ending, and you start hearing the beginning of the strumming, and then they intercut footage of this Jerry Maguire's old boss who's talking directly to the audience. And have any three of you seen that movie or the scene I'm talking about?
I've been meaning to. I haven't seen it.
So anyway, the boss says, you know, I've had some setbacks, and to be honest, I've failed as much as I've succeeded, but I love my life, I love my wife, and I wish you my kind of success. And that's the end of the movie. And then it cuts right to the song playing full blast. And it's not the Hard Rain, it's the Blood on the Tracks version. And I saw that movie I was in my 20s, and I was wondering, who's the person I'm kind of meant to be here, and all these big meaningful questions. And it was just very powerful. It was a very, very powerful use of a song I already loved with a message I thought was really very interesting. And like I said, it hasn't held up super well, but the intercutting that Cameron Crowe, who we know is a big Dylan fan, uses to that is, to me, just beautiful. And I still think it holds up beautifully well. And Bob was nice enough to actually give Cameron Crowe an alternate take of the song. It has a verse that does not appear on the Blood on the Tracks version. There's an extra verse in it, which, of course, as a Bob Dylan fan, I sat in the theater, I was like, wait, what? Like, what's that line? I don't know that line, you know. So but yeah, so that remains my favorite use of Bob Dylan in the non-setting. So okay. Rebecca, your last question.
Okay, so this is sort of in the vein of Traveling Wilburys-esque questions, where like you're designing out of other artists, you're creating the band. Like if you were Bob Dylan, who is your the band? I have sort of an unconventional answer. I'm going to steal the Jonas Brothers and make them into my band because I loved the Jonas Brothers when I was young. It was like one of my first huge obsessions. And I feel that they have lost their way. And I think that they need some music direction. I think they need to get back to their pop rock roots. They freaking played with Paul McCartney in the height of their day. And Paul McCartney was like, these guys could be the next Beatles. But they've lost the way. And I think they just need to try some drugs and get in that studio and see what happens. So that's me. Like, I'm going to orchestrate them becoming as good as the band.
That was not what I would have expected you to say. I don't know what I expected, but it was not.
I'm gonna be honest, Rebecca, I'm not sure what this question even means.
It's whatever you want it to be.
This very differently.
No, I have no idea what you meant by this.
However you want, it's just a prompt.
Allison, I can't wait to hear your answer to this.
Yeah, I took this from a much less creative aspect, I guess. And I immediately thought, like, I have a hard time separating, you know, like distinct people from different bands. And for me, it's got to be like the band in and of itself as it already existed. And for me, that's still the Heartbreakers. I don't think, like, In my opinion, they're the greatest American rock and roll band. Maybe that's my hot take of the episode, and you can disagree with me if you'd like. But that to me is the ultimate in terms of chemistry and style and ability to deliver. And for me, like, that is my, that would be my rock. That would be my band.
All right. I love it. I love the very different interpretations of this. So, okay,
yes,
Melissa, what
this.
Did you, what?
Again, I don't really know what this question means, but like, I was just thinking about, like, in the best possible way, but I was, like, my initial thought was like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. Just because, like, you know, it didn't work out, at least, like, you know, with the Young part, especially, they dropped him, but, like, they all sound so good together, and especially in those early days where, like, none of them were who they are yet, and so it's, like, a similar thing where it's, like, with the band, it's, like, they were just the band at first, and, like, they were just Bob Dylan's band, and then they became like something greater than that. And I think with Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, a similar thing happened. Well, now I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, the Monkees. But but no, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, just because like individually, they're all wonderful. And then like Crosby, Stills, Nash, their voices sound so nice together. And I guess like Neil is sort of an outlier among that because like, he didn't harmonize as much with them and stuff, so it makes sense. But I love Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. They're a little super group before any of them were individually super. So, yeah, I don't know. That's my answer.
Okay. I'll tell you, Rebecca, I took this question as I'm not literally Bob Dylan, but I'm a Bob Dylan-esque figure, and who would I want to work with? Like, what band would I want to work with? That's how I took it. And so not having a single lick of musical talent, it was kind of hard for me to, you know, think about it. But okay. I went with one of my favorite records, non-Bob Dylan variety, is Jenny Lewis's Rabbit Fur Coat. I've listened to that record 40 billion times. And it's she did it with this pair of backup singers, the Watson Twins. And I love that record. And they, as far as I know, she's not returned to the, she's not brought them back on any of her other records. I have some of her others and they're not on it. It's, I love every song on the record. They cover Handle With Care on it. There's a line about where she's like, my dad's growing Bob Dylan's beard. Like there's a lot of Dylan stuff on it. It's, but it's just an absolute, I mean, I love Jenny Lewis and I think it's my favorite record of hers. And like, that's, I would be like, okay, Jenny is going to be my Robbie Robertson and the Watson Twins are my band. Like, I want to tour with you guys together. So that's how I would, that's how I would take it. I wouldn't go on a tour with Jenny Lewis and the Watson Twins as a, because I'd be like, this collaboration was great. I want to hear more of this. So if I have to be the Bob Dylan in this scenario and get you out there, I'll do it. So that's how I took that question.
So cool. Love
so, that. Okay. Well, the final question we have is from Allison. So go ahead. Boy.
Well, my question was, what is your favorite Bob Dylan concert ad lib, interview question response ad lib, press conference thing? We all know that Bob loves to say some pretty cheeky things. So that was my question, if you have a favorite. And my top two, are, at the moment at least, are one, the clip where he's like in a parking lot, he's off the tour bus and he's talking to some kids about metal bands. And he's like, How about Rat? You like Ozzy? And he's like asking these 10-year-olds about what metal bands they like. And I find that hysterical. And the other is stemming from, Rob, you mentioned the We Are the World documentary, which I watched recently. And anyone who hasn't seen that, the Bob content in that is A+. It's so good. But he was asked about that experience like a couple of years later at a press conference and the interviewer is like, tell me about working on We Are the World. And he kind of hesitates for a second. He's like, I don't remember that, honestly. I did my best. He like does not have any recollection of working on the song at all. And it's just, it. And he's wearing like the zebra shirt and the eyeliner and the whole thing. The mise en scène is just, oh my God, it's perfect.
All right, Rebecca.
I wouldn't say that this, what I'm about to say is my favorite, but I do think it's pretty cool how he compared himself to Lee Harvey Oswald.
Ooh.
Like, I understand why everyone was upset about that, but I think it's kind of crazy awesome how he did that. Cause like, that's so true. We're all capable of terrible things and we're all capable as humans of amazing things. And I think that was really badass how I said that. More in line with what we've all been saying about, like, we love when Bob Dylan's more chill and less, like, of an asshole. I just have this, like, stuck in my brain from a clip of Newport 64 when he's, like, running up to the mic and he goes, I want to say thank you. I want to say thank you. I love you. And he just says that to the audience so full of joy and glee that he gets to perform for these people. And he just loves the applause so much. It's just a pure, innocent moment of Bob Dylan. You don't really get to see that often.
That's I don't think I've ever heard that.
Me neither. You got to send that.
I'll send that. Yeah, I'll find
that
it.
That sounds amazing. I love Happy Bob. I love Happy Bob. That's just so good. So, all right, Melissa, let's bring it home.
Okay. Well, mine isn't like funny, I guess. But oh god, I mean, he said so many things. But I don't know. Oh gosh. Well, now I'm not being able to make up my mind so much during this podcast. I'm so sorry. When I don't even know what interview it was, I just like saw this on Twitter. But when somebody asked about like what it was like or how growing up in the Midwest affected him, or like what's different about the Midwest than like growing up other places or something. And he says, I don't know, I was never a kid anywhere else, which is like such a great, like it's such a simple, like it's like such the bare truth, but it is so, it's such a simple way to just say like, not exactly that you are where you come from, but like that perspective is, something that even if you've lived, you know, in one place your entire life, and but you moved when you were 15 or whatever, there's like nowhere that can replace like where you went through puberty, basically, or like grew up when you were 6 years old or something. And I thought that was wonderful. And there's so many things that he says like that, where it's just like, you get it, man. I don't know. There's so many things that he gets. It's crazy.
I don't think I've ever heard that either.
I'll send it. That.
Yeah, we're gonna this whole thread and on Twitter is gonna be just us sending links back and forth. Well, that, again, that's Allison. It's a marvelous question, and those are great answers. I had two. I'm cheating a little, but it's my show. What the hell? The short version is in the '66 San Francisco press conference, which we actually covered on the show, where he says, "Good luck. I hope you make it." That's how every song of mine ends. I love hopeful Bob, you know, Bob doesn't bullshit, you know, and so when he tries to be positive, I always find that to be really charming. So just saying that every song is me saying, I hope you make it. I just think is really quite beautiful and profound in its own short way. And then long form. I feel like I can't not mention his Grammy Lifetime Award speech. Which again features some of the best comic timing, this side of Charlie Chaplin. You know, my daddy, he didn't leave me too much. You know, he's a very simple man, but he didn't tell me this. He did say, son, he said, and then the crowd, you know, he leaves the crowd hanging to where the people are like, is this guy lost his mind? And then he said so many things, you know, I mean, just absolute, just spot on comic timing. But then he ends it with, and I'm going to read it, because I don't want to mess it up. He says, you know, it's possible to become so defiled in this world that your own mother and father will abandon you. And if that happens, God will always believe in your own ability to mend your own ways. I heard that in 1991. You know, I heard it live. I watched it when it happened. I was bewildered by it. I didn't know what it meant. But I was just getting into him. And it struck me in a way. I've never been religious. But the idea of that whatever answers you need are going to be found in yourself. And then even God itself will be looking down on you and knowing that you can do it. I found that to be just one of the most beautiful things I ever heard anybody say. And it really helped cement my love for this guy. I'm like, this guy just doesn't make great music. He's like this insane oracle full of crazy, weird things that like hit you later on. And I never forgot about it, you know, and some of the stuff he mentions in that speech has happened to me. And it remains to me incredibly profound. And to give that comment when he was getting a Grammy Lifetime Achievement, where he could go be on and on about how, yeah, this is great, I guess I'm great, you know, I mean, like, it would be a time to really back slap yourself. And he doesn't. Instead, he gives advice to people about what happens if they feel like they're at their end of the rope. And I just found it's beautiful. And I would love to know when he wrote that, you know, like, is it a quote that he pulled? I don't know. But I just think it's gorgeous and I love him for it. And so that is my favorite thing I've ever heard him say. So, had I known that this idea that I came up with was going to be this fun, I would have pitched this a lot earlier. I would not have waited until the show was wrapping up to do this, because this was an absolute delight to speak to the three of you, and your input, these questions I thought were just fantastic. And I just want to say, you know, thank you all for being on this episode, and thank you for being a friend of the show for all these years. I really appreciate it. I always hoped that by the format of the show that I could have as many different kinds of people to talk about Bob as possible, because I am the common denominator of the show. I'm the old cis white guy, and those are my opinions, but I always was hoping I could have as many different kinds of people as possible on the show. And I am very humbled that you all were nice enough to come onto Pod Dylan multiple times, and especially this one last time. So thank you all for doing this. It really means a lot to me.
It was more than a pleasure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. This has been so cool. I had such a blast talking to you guys and talking to you, Rob. Thanks so much for having us.
So fun.
Absolutely.
I love our Bob community.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I look forward to being part of it without having to record and edit an hour of audio every week, you know. I can just enjoy things like a normal person. Anyway, thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed this show. I know I certainly did. I can't wait for you, just as we're wrapping up here and recording it, I can't wait for you all to hear it. So of course you can follow the show on various social medias, and if you want to hear the previous 100 episodes, you can subscribe to the show on fmpods.com. All the rest of the episodes will be available there, plus on the various podcast platforms. So that is going to do it. We will see you next week for another multiple guest show, and until then, bye. I guess I'll go to Florida.